Welcome to the Full Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:09 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 11th, and today, what we saw in China was Xi Jinping making some statements about the need for additional stimulative action. But then there were a couple of articles in Early Trading last night talking about how much the property developers had rebounded, but by the time we got to the end of trading, most of them were in negative territory. So this is Longform Group, which is one of the big property developers. It's still in a downtrend. So this basically tells us that Chinese investors are in a show me the money type of mood, and they're not going to be drawn in by vacuous statements, and rather people are waiting for clear evidence of a big push. Now, I'm not alien to the idea that a big amount of stimulus from China would put in a low for some of these shares and would probably create a new cyclical bull in some of the China-focused funds. But that is totally reliant on a big new round of stimulus. And we have to also bear in mind that the big bull market that's been underway since late 2008 has been predicated on liquidity. It's been a liquidity-fueled bull market. So, without liquidity, then the basis on which this phenomenal asset price appreciation that's been underway for the last 15 years, it's not quite as convincing, despite all of the other really inspiring bullish themes. To have a bull market, not only do you need to have a big story and a fundamental case, but for that to really fire the imaginations of investors, you also need abundant liquidity. So when we think about where the levers of global liquidity are, China is a big one of those, and it has been one of the really significant levers for liquidity over the course of the last decade. So their basic refusal to pull that lever on this occasion is weighing on sentiment globally. And of course, that has knock-on effects for all the countries that export into China. Now, the Australian market had pulled back sharply yesterday and then found support today around 7,000. And it's just about holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's a little oversold in the short term, but it has certainly got some work to do. Now, the interesting thing here is that oil prices are steadier, and we're up over a dollar in here today. So we have Brent crude now approaching the $80 level. This is a new 2-month high. There's the possibility that it's on the cusp of breaking on the upside. If it sustains a move up through $80, then there's the clear potential that it will have then broken, or it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And then, because we've had such an inert trading environment, then it could quite easily break substantially higher. Now, I've been of the view that oil prices would more than likely break on the downside simply because global demand is ebbing. But certainly, without a China stimulus and the potential that they will eventually have to stimulate, it's really not a question of if, but when they stimulate the economy. That may be one of the factors that's helping to support oil prices. So it is certainly something to pay attention to, because when it breaks, regardless of which direction it breaks in, that breakout is likely to be really quite dynamic. Then let's also pay attention to India. So the Indian market has continued to extend its breakout, and this is a clear move on the upside, and it's not being supported by a significant depreciation of the currency. So this is new money coming into the Indian market. Despite the higher valuation, investors are willing to give it the benefit of the doubt that the growth potential is likely to be higher. Now, India is getting a lot of rain right now, so that is a good sign that this monsoon season will be a favorable one. And generally, that does help to contain some of the inflationary pressures. So, one thing, just as an aside, I think is particularly important. There's a lot of people writing about the weather right now that are not from the places where that weather is experienced. So we had breathless news items last week talking about how hot it is in Texas. But it's hot in Texas every summer. Then talking about record temperatures in Arizona in July. Well, it's not unusual to see 45 degree temperatures in July, even if it's consecutive days. This is a region where there is a lot of air conditioning, so it's not going to have nearly the same negative consequences as when you have very high temperatures in Europe where there is no air conditioning. Then people talking about India being inundated by rain during the monsoon, it just sounds ridiculous considering that that's normal. So we have to at least pay attention to where we are in seasons, what's happening overall. But I think some of the other standouts are that there has been torrential rain in the northeast of the USA, which has caused flooding, and that is not so seasonal. But there is drought activity beginning to become apparent in the middle of the Corn Belt, but basically nowhere else. And corn prices have come down like a stone over the course of the last 2 weeks. So that's not suggestive of a problem with supply. And it suggests that the drought conditions aren't likely to be problematic. Now, there is a backwardation between the front month and the second month. And then we have contango all the way out to 2024. So it's suggesting that the lack of supply is something that is going to abate over time. Now, cotton prices have been basing for most of the last 8 months, and they are beginning to steady. And this is also intimately attached to the China stimulus question. But and again, I've seen articles talking about how hot it is in Texas, but they don't talk about how much rain there has been in Texas. And certainly heat will stress plants, but lack of water stresses them a lot more. And it's been really quite wet. It was raining this morning in Texas. I remember last summer, we didn't have rain for 2 months, and we've had rain at least once or twice a week all spring long. So the ground is not nearly as dry as it was over the last several years, and that is likely to be beneficial for plant growth. So there is obviously the potential that we're going to see some of the supply data surprise on the upside and perhaps cap some of the rallies that are underway. Now, let's then think about what else is going on in the broader global environment. So, Sweden has been will be admitted into NATO. Now, the Swedish kroner is beginning to steady, and it's spent a good long time weakening between 2021 and 2022, and it's now showing at least some evidence of steadier action. We are now likely to see greater interest coming through into the defense sector. I do think that what's going on in on the Ukrainian front is rather interesting, and I think it is too early to just write off Russia. The fact that Putin met the leader of the Wagner Group immediately after the so-called coup, I find to be deeply suspicious. And one thing that we can think about is that Ukraine has been probing the Russian defenses over the last several weeks, and they haven't found an opening. And Russia successfully tied up Ukraine's offensive capability in the city of Bakhmut for several months, and that allowed them to build a significant defensive rampart right across the southern front. So Ukraine has spent much of the summer trying to probe that front. Now, when they eventually find a hole in it, well, then they will probably commit additional forces. But they can't afford to get it wrong. Russia has vastly superior numbers. And if Ukraine were to lose a significant proportion of their armed forces, then their defensive capability would be greatly impacted as a result. So, what that is a recipe for is a prolonged war where there will be tit-for-tat moves, and Ukraine has only captured it's something ridiculously small in terms of territory during this offensive. Now, there is one way of thinking about it is that they're waiting, they're biding their time, and they're waiting for the best possible opportunity. The second is that Russia has put a lot of work into building defensive capabilities, and it's going to be a lot harder to take back territory. And this is going to play very heavily into the metals, excuse me, not the metals, the defensive sector. So Rheinmetall is beginning to steady from the region of the 200-day moving average. And Thales isn't is more of an aeronautics company, but it has a broadly similar pattern overall. BAE Systems had pulled back really quite violently over the last 7 or 8 weeks, but it is now showing first evidence of finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And then the iShares Defence ETF is right in the region of the upper side of its range and looks likely that it will break on the upside. Lots of defence companies have not committed funds to building new infrastructure and expanding capacity. They're waiting for governments to come through with budgets and a commitment to longer purchasing. But of course, what that also means is that if they're not building new factories and they're not expending or they're not expanding, well, what that also implies is that they're going to have greater profits and more money to distribute to shareholders. So I think that is probably what is factoring through into support for the sector overall. And then we also have the broader crypto sector. And Bitcoin, having been down about $400 today, recouped most of the decline. It's still holding the 30,000 level. The speculation around the launching of Bitcoin ETFs should support Coinbase. Any ETF requires the ability to transact effectively and efficiently. And for that, they need an exchange. And they need the exchange to be sufficiently large and also not having a conflict of interest in order to be a reliable partner. And the one thing that Coinbase has in its favor is that the management there resisted the temptation to create their own token, and they continue to focus on simple execution. So they're now going to be, it's or at least it looks likely that they will be relied upon to also provide know your customer anti-money laundering services to some of these emerging Bitcoin ETFs. And that's a very significant boost to the potential for volume to move through the exchange, which should help to drive a further bull market, provided Bitcoin prices do in fact break away from the 30,000 level. So the share is now at a new 14-month high and looks likely that it will exceed the $100 level and break out of this base formation that's been underway now for 2 years. Then some of the Bitcoin miners like Riot have continued to extend their breakout, and then MicroStrategy has a very similar pattern and has cleared its own base formation. So these are looking like increasingly bullish chart patterns, and there's certainly the potential for additional upside in the event that Bitcoin ETFs are in fact confirmed. Then Ethereum prices are still steadying below the 2000 level, and a sustained move above that area will confirm the return to medium-term demand dominance. And of course, all of this is happening in an environment where we know there's going to be a Bitcoin halving in 2024, and those generally tend to concentrate the focus of investors on limited supply arguments. And then, of course, the other limited supply asset is gold, and the price today was up about $6, and it is firming in the region of the $1,900 level. Of course, we have the CPI figures coming out tomorrow, and that is likely to be a point of potential volatility. But the two things that contribute to a big bull market in gold are potential future bullish signals. One will be the continued depreciation of the dollar, and the second will be the related factor of the trend of positive real rates turning around. So, 10-year yields were a little softer. Well, I guess were contracted somewhat in here today, continuing to pause around the 4% level. And that is the region of the peaks from back in March. There are obviously arguments for why inflation should or could be more permanent, whether that is because globalization is not nearly as reliable as it was in the past, or that the baby boomer generation has retired en masse, and that there is no clear way to increase the workforce easily. And of course, then we also have the anti-immigration themes that are emerging in several countries. So that closes off an additional potential source of where labor could come from. And that's obviously putting upward pressure on wage demands. So there is, and then of course you have all the money that's being printed and the deficits and the absence of an easy way to close those deficits and get spending under control. So there's obviously the potential that inflation could be sticky, but I remain of the view that the process of quantitative tightening contributes to deflationary factors. And we know that CPI and its X, let me see if I can find it, it's the services X housing is the primary one that the Fed pays attention to. And this will be the index that the Fed is paying attention to. And of course, that's not the kind of figure that is released easily, or there's not one of the main headlines. So I'm showing you here the absolute rather than the year over year, because what they really want is not simply that the year over year figure is going to contract, but rather that we've had an incredible acceleration of this trend. So what they would most particularly like is for the trend to, or it for it to come back to trend. And in order for that to happen, then we're going to have to see prices fall. And of course, that is coincident with recessionary kinds of environments. Now, something to pay attention to is high yield spreads, and they have not been surging higher. In fact, spreads have contracted over the last couple of weeks. So that is suggesting that stress within at the credit markets is not readily apparent, even though bankruptcies are increasing and interest rates continue to rise. So we have this mismatch where there will be zombie companies that go bust, but then lots of companies also took the opportunity of record low spreads and yields during the pandemic to refinance. And those companies are in a pretty strong position, provided they can make their coupon payments. usually high yield companies run into issues when they need to refinance, and the incredibly low rates during 2020, 2021, those were an really once in a lifetime opportunity to capture a low refinancing cost. And of course, what that is also doing is applying to the consumers who bought houses and were able to lock in very low mortgage rates. So those people aren't moving. And I think it's very easy to highlight the difference here. So the payment, just all other factors being equal, when you've got a 3% on 3% rate on 100,000 is 421. And when you get up to 8%, well, then it's not quite double, but it's really not that far off it. So there is nobody going to volunteer to pay a doubling for the same value, or accepting half the house that they might have been able to buy when rates were lower. So there's a lot of people that are simply stuck in their homes and can't move, even if they were thinking about it. Whereas there are still going to be lots of people who want to buy a home and are willing to bet that even if they lock in a rate now, that they will be able to refinance at lower rates in future. Now, of course, that is a unique North American way of calculating, a particular US way of calculating. Lots of other people have to contend with having to fix for 2 years or 5 years at the most, and then taking a gamble on where interest rates are likely to be. And of course, that's a major consideration in the UK, with large numbers of mortgages that are going to be refinanced over the course of the next several months. And the 2 year yield in the UK pushed on to new highs, or the new, excuse me, the 2 year mortgage rate pushed on to new highs in here today. Now, the FTSE 100 is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and the strength of the pound is weighing on it. So the pound is resurgent and up to 129 now, and continuing to extend this bull trend. So the Bank of England continues to talk about doing what's necessary to get inflation under control, and interest rate differentials are now in favor of the pound. So that is weighing on indices like the FTSE 100, because all those international earnings don't amount to much or as much when the pound is rallying in such an adroit fashion. Of course, what it also means is that the UK is becoming a more attractive place to put cash if one can pick up the carry as well as the appreciating currency. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.